Thank you. I'm actually pleased to see so many people here after our wonderful dinner last night and our wonderful drinks. You can see here, this is actually a report on the... Sorry, I was asked to actually point here, so I'll try to do that. this is a report of the EHT Technical Working Group. And we're also going, I will present something about the forward look towards the observations in 2015 and the outfitting the telescopes for those observations. Okay. All right. The technical working group was convened actually about a year ago, a year and a half ago, I think, by now. And you can see it consists of these people, and mostly people, most of these people represent a telescope, a facility. Part that's part of the EHT network. And Shep actually was kind enough to join many of our telecons with expert advice and to help us along. The charge to the ETWG was to survey the capabilities and establish a list of specifications for future EHT observations based on the capabilities of the future capabilities of the facilities, and then outline the technical developments that are needed to actually reach those goals. And then actually based on also on the prioritized science objectives to formulate a project roadmap for the EHT, and actually one that is feasible and can be done in the time scales and with the resources that we have available. So most of the first three we have done. The third one is sort of ongoing, although I think we know where we want to go. Now, EHT, we all know, consists of a lot of telescopes. It's 10 different telescopes, and they all have to work in a network, all of them together. And and we've been to several of these facilities, and normally we actually take the equipment there. Sometimes the equipment is there, but for most of these facilities, we have to actually do considerable effort to actually get the equipment there for the observation run and then actually observe. And the next step is to actually install permanent Field BI capability at most of these observatories. And, you know, that is not an easy task. You have to know where the observatory is going. So one of the first things we did is we did a survey of the future capabilities. Now, I've shown these kind of slides at other presentations. And it's just a lot of numbers. So I thought that this time I take a slightly different approach and then more of to actually show you, guide you through the decision process that went along. But we didn't catalog a lot of the capabilities, future capabilities. So it's somewhat of a guesswork here and there of the facilities. So first of all, this is sort of where we are or where we have been. About 8 gigabits per second. Don't worry, you just divide it by 2 and you get sort of total aggregate bandwidth. So that represents 2 gigahertz or dual polarization 2.2 times 1 gigahertz. And that was supported by the existing equipment, such as an RDBE and a Mark V recorder for the data recording. Now, the question is, where do you go from here? Because we want to go to much higher bandwidth. The various options scale rather easily by factors of 2, as you can see. And here are sort of the options. It's a bronze, silver, gold, and platinum. Well, okay, blue system. Somebody tell me the color code for bronze, please, because I never got that one right. You can see the bandwidth, you know, from the existing 2 gigahertz, we have like 4, 8, 16, 32 gigahertz in aggregate bandwidth. And the first three of these sort of correspond to dual polarization configuration, so 2 times 1, 2 times 2, 2 times 4. The last two actually also represent the sideband separating dual polarization configurations, where you also get upper and lower sideband splits, so you get the 2 times 2 times 4 to actually build up your bandwidth. The question is, where in this map sit all the telescopes, or will the telescopes sit? And easy one to put down is the IRAM facility with 30 meter and Plateau de Bure or Noema, as they are going to be in the upgraded array. They sort of sit in the 120 gigabit per second range with a, they have sideband separating, dual polarization, 8 gigahertz. On the other end of the spectrum is the JCMT currently. It only has, actually, it doesn't even have 2x2, it only has 1x2, single polarization. And but fortunately, it can be fairly easily upgraded, that receiver, and we are in the process of doing that, and we probably won't move right here. It can be upgraded to at least a bandwidth of 8 gigahertz. Putting in that same receiver, putting in a mixer that is actually a different mixer. It will still be single polarization, but at least it moves over here. That same area, Karma and the SMA are in that area. They have currently 8 gigahertz bandwidth, single polarization for the SMA. Karma is a double sideband system, but it has an 8 gigahertz bandwidth. Now, when I say that, I naturally also will upset people because they always tell me they have plans to go to the next step. And that is true. I mean, SMA is pushing to larger bandwidth, but for the next few years, it probably will be still be here. Then we have APEX. APEX sort of currently sits over here, but that is very easily done because APEX will upgrade. And it will have a new receiver probably already in the spring of next year that will put it right here at the end with dual 8 gigahertz bandwidth. Now, this is actually kind of interesting because these upgrades to the JCMT and the upgrades to APEX were a direct consequence of us actually putting this list together. It actually showed to the observatories that they were sort of the oddball out on the side, and they made the effort then, they are making the effort, to upgrade to become in this area. So we can quickly go through that. ALMA, actually not so quickly, ALMA requires a little bit of talking because that is a difficult one to actually pin down. At 230 gigahertz, ALMA's nominal mixer range is 4 to 12 gigahertz, so it has an 8 gigahertz bandwidth, and put it here. The mixers did not, however, did not meet spec, and the only band that was opened for observations was 5 to 10 gigahertz, and so that puts it more in the 4 gigahertz range. And on top of that, ALMA's IF system cannot support more than 16 gigahertz in total. From a telescope. So you can do 2x8, or you can sideband separating, dual polarization, 4 gigahertz. Now they're all working on that and to actually actually improve that. But right now, ALMA is sort of like, you know, in between a 4 to 8 instantaneous band that then in aggregate will actually count up to 2x2x4. SPT, SMT, and LMT, I should actually point out that the restriction on ALMA is mostly software, and in principle, they could open up the telescope for this larger 8 gigahertz bandwidth. However, you would have impaired performance. SPT, SMT, and LMT will all use the same mixers. They will all suffer to some degree from the same effect. However, they don't have a software restriction, so they will actually operate sort of in between this 4 and 8 gigahertz bandwidth. In short, if I would say where do you want to target your future millimeter field BI system to take advantage of this whole new all these new receivers and in the large bandwidth, you want to target it actually somewhere around here. Definitely, you want to actually be able to capitalize on ALMA. That means you have to do 2x2x4. So in the gold box, but you really would also like to look forward to a lot of facilities that actually will have 128 gigabits per second. So you know that's why I would put our target for based on the telescope's capabilities. Next question is, however, where does current technology allow us to go? And that is actually, I have to say a little bit about this. If you look at a very schematic version of a VLBI signal chain, you have the receiver here, at the top, it's linear left-hand, right-hand polarization, circular polarization, or whatever polarizations come in. And it will bring out an analog IF. The IF will need to be, this analog IF will need to be down-converted for digitization in the digital backends. And the digital backends then typically put it into a recorder system. And what we have available, you know, we have the down-converted digital backends are 1632 or 64 gigabit per second versions of the R2DBE and the European counterpart DBBC3. And recorder is currently, this is Mark 6, which runs at 16 gigabits per second. Now, there will be lots, there's actually lots of other equipment needed, and Alan will show you at least one of them on my request, so that you shouldn't think that this is just everything there is to it. There's a lot more to it. Also, the interferometers, instead of using the down converter and digital backend, they actually use, they have to use a beamformer. And Mike Hecht will actually talk about the ALMA beamformer that is being done. So it is slightly different for the interferometers. Now, these pieces of equipment exist, and due to a lot of effort of a lot of people at Haystack and also in Europe, over the past, well, even 6 months, actually, of course, much longer, but certainly they put in a lot of effort to make this equipment available. So we have the R2DBE here, and Laura will talk about that. The Mark VI is now probably a year and a half, is available from Conduent, the 16 gigahertz, and you can see that it uses, it actually uses four modules, as we call them, each with 8 disks. So it's actually pretty large, 8 hard drives, and so can carry instantaneously 192 terabytes of disks. And the DBCC3 is being developed in Europe. It has modular slots and can go up between 16 and 64. The R2DBE are fairly small units that you would have to have more of one unit to go to the higher rates. And it will hopefully become available in July 2015. Actually, it's on target to become available, so you know, I'm pretty sure it will be available. So if you have this next generation equipment, let's just concentrate on the Mark VIs. You know, if you have 7 station VLBI run, 5 nights, 16 hours, 65% duty cycle, this is what you actually are talking about. At 16 gigabits per second, you can do with one Mark VI, but you need like a total over the 7 stations of 2.6 petabyte of data storage. If you go on the other end, you need 8 Mark VIs. Now that is real. That is a serious amount of real estate that you have to put into place. And you need like 4 down converters. You need like, depending on what box, but you would need something like 8 R2DBEs. Now, that is massive. And you need 21 petabyte of data storage. So, you know, if you want to, you can push there, but you can. This is becoming a logistic nightmare. So if I actually would actually want to pitch where we want to be somewhere here, where it's still a lot of work, but not unwieldy. So it's a four R2DBEs or a 64 gigabit per second version, possibly of the DBC3, 4 Mark VIs, and 1.5 petabyte per station. So that actually shows you where we are, and I think it solidly identifies that. Reaching ALMA, capitalizing on ALMA's capabilities is feasible, and that's where we're going. Resources actually were, we call it bronze, silver, and gold, depend on the resources we have where you can reach that. But it's become quite clear with the resources in-house, we at least can get a 32, and we will actually get there fairly quickly, and then the 64, I think, is not going to be a major problem. Let's see. There are actually consequences, because I should actually go back. We have identified this is the maximum we can get out of ALMA, and it requires a sideband separating setup. This means if we are in single sideband, this shows you the bands on the sky for an observation at 214.1 gigahertz. There's all the facilities, here are the frequencies, And you can see actually where the sidebands actually come on the sky. And we have the freedom, if you have only one sideband, to actually align the sideband on one side completely irrespective of the sideband on the other side. Right? So that is easy. We can do that. However, when we go to sideband separating systems where we want to say both sidebands have to be on the same sky frequency. So this quite greatly restricts us because of this. And I've actually shown all these systems like the SMT and SPT that have Alma-style mixers. If you all want to use them where the mixers are working well, between 5 and 10 gigahertz, that's where it actually lay. And you actually have only one IF frequency available. You have to be at 5 to 9 gigahertz. And this is a little bit of a pain, to be honest. And it cost a lot. We had a lot of discussion about it, because naturally the systems are 4 to 12. 5 to 9 is neither 4 to 8 nor 8 to 12. We're sort of straddling sort of a region that is not nicely half of the system. And the complications there are, we solved it, and I'll show you how we did that easily. But there's still complications left, because a number of these systems, such as the SMA and the two ERAM systems, they actually have a natural split down the middle. For various reasons, they do it differently. So we have to actually find a solution how to extract a 5 to 9 band from two systems that are actually 4 gigahertz downstream. But we have solutions. The solution, actually, we said we actually throw more money at it. We will build a down converter that can actually do both. It can take either 4 to 8 or 5 to 9 and down convert those frequencies into a band that can be used by the backends, by the R2DBEs, for instance. And now this was designed, the system, by the people from Haystack. Actually, Laura has a long list of all the people who have worked on these systems, so I refrain from naming everyone in the rest of the talk, and she will actually show that. And this system was actually designed over the summer and is in production as we speak. It's also important that we had to keep the 4 to 8 region, because that's where naturally, if you do the same analysis for the 345, it's where actually the 345 falls. That we need to use 4 to 8 gigahertz. All right, observing frequency there. Yeah, 5 minutes, yes. Observing frequency there, we actually have a lot of constraints that we have to do. Dan is smiling because he put a lot of these things together. We worked on that very hard. Where actually, the South Pole telescope is a fixed-tune telescope. Normally, we can tune anywhere where we want, but the South Pole is fixed-tuned, so we have to be careful which frequency to use for the South Pole that we're going to observe. We want to avoid, of course, the CO. We want to actually be cognizant of the atmospheric transmission. We want to, for calibration and telescope commissioning, you want to have access to spectral lines, but you don't really want the spectral lines when you're doing field BI. And also, there's the performance of the wave plates. So he came up with this plot. And you see the atmospheric transmission here in the 200 gigahertz range. First of all, the frequency that we chose was 221.1 gigahertz. Sorry. In a sideband separating system with 5.9 gigahertz, 5 to 9 gigahertz IF, that puts the lower sideband here, upper sideband there. And it puts the SIO maser line, a very strong line. Actually, that's not present on the galactic center, so that's not a problem. But right inside the band, so we can actually use that for calibration. It puts the CO in the extended band, right, where the performance of the mixer may be slightly worse for the SPT. But otherwise, it is clear of strong line, mostly clear of strong lines, and it's also reasonably well aligned with the quarter wave plates that we have to actually regulate polarization, and then we'll talk more about that. For 345, we had a similar type of thing. We chose 342.3. Again, we have access to the galactic CO in the extended tuning band. We avoid most of the lines. We are sort of in the best part of the transmission of the of the atmosphere. I said polarization is another issue that we had to take care of, because the polarization at different telescopes do not automatically align, and that means that we are using a quarter wave plate, a polarimeter with a quarter wave plate. And there are problems associated with that going forward. And as I said, Dan will actually talk about it, and Ivan will also discuss this in context of the APP, the beamformer for ALMA. So if I actually summarize the specifications, they come down here. These we've talked about. We will actually have to use dual polarization as a standard, so it's not an option anymore in the future. Dual polarization will be needed in order to take care of the to align the polarizations. The polarizations product at the correlator, that is actually something that's, that Dan will talk about. And very important, which I am not going to talk about either too much, are semi-turnkey systems. Now, where are we going actually? This is the one before last slide. Where are we going actually in 2015? We plan a campaign. I have to be careful, these things are in flux. We plan a campaign at the end of 2015 of up to 5 nights. We're planning for 16 gigabits per second, fielding a new VLBI, the next generation VLBI signal chain. Sites, tentative sites, are all these telescopes you see in the background there. And what is very important is that we actually will pass a threshold. We will actually install permanent VLBI equipment at all these telescopes. It's being readied for shipment and installation at these sites. Also due to a significant financial support from the ERC grant, the European grant. So that is that came just in time. That was very fortunate. And you can see here the status, what we do, what we're currently busy with. Different systems are being assembled and have been ordered. The Mark 6s, the recorders are in-house. 6 terabyte drives, we actually are testing them, or will be testing them in a hyperbaric chamber, both for before we actually mass order this massive amount of petabytes. This is the system that we will field. We'll actually implement a 32 gigabit per second system already. And for the spring campaign, we will not exercise half of the system, so that we have leeway and can deal with contingencies, at least not standard use half of the system. At the IRAM telescope, we will actually also use a prototype of the European black end, the DBBC3. And hopefully this whole system, so we basically exercise all the next generation equipment, hopefully this next one. There are many other developments associated with this, and you will hear about those this morning. Also, the ETWG talked a lot about longer term goals. There's issues with the correlation, and Jeff Crew will talk about that. We have to make the transition from these systems that require an enormous amount of work to actually get a VLBI run on the sky with people flying everywhere and whole actually half teams flying there. We have to make the change to semi-turnkey systems. ETWG, we also start worrying about quality assurance. What do we have to do to get better quality? Well, better quality is maybe not a good word, but to assure the quality of the data. It's typically very difficult when you do the observations to know whether you actually have fringes. So what can we do and what developments are needed to make that more tractable? Also, what do we have to do to make the calibration, which is a major headache, ask Vincent. What do we need to do, actually, to make the calibration easier at these telescopes? And finally, you know, we are not resourced to actually work on a future millimeter VLBI network in general, but we definitely are cognizant of the fact that there's a desire by many parties to actually eventually have a facility grow out of this, and even if we're not responsible for it or we don't take responsibility for that, we will actually also clearly fold that into our developments. so that we don't, that we put that in. He says zero. I have to shut up. Okay. Okay. Thank you for your attendance.
Remo, do you see any possibility of frequency agility within the 1.3 millimeter band? So say doing observations at 260 gigahertz.
Well, without the SPT, yes.
Uh-huh.
Without the SPT, we have the ability to actually change, to go to any frequency. Especially, of course, if you are single sideband, 260 pushes you up against the high end of some of the receivers, so you have to be careful where you put
sure.
upper or lower sideband. In principle, yes. I don't know what you want, but it's not. This is not our goal. We have. This is what. This is a fixed thing.
I realize that a fixed tuning is a good plan, but there's science that would benefit.
It is.
From
if during all this we discover that the 221.1 is actually not the right spot or bandwidth change, and we have to go somewhere else. Then we'll adjust the telescope, the receiver.
Okay.
There was a question, Gopal? Oh.
So if indeed we are going to go to 260 gigahertz or so in the RF the band, I think that needs to be discussed pretty soon, because the GaN LO systems, at least for the LMT, the kind of things we're planning or is oriented around 230 gigahertz.
Yes.
So I think it would be good to know what is the full tuning range. While the native receiver can go to 280, the LO system, we have to plan and build accordingly. So it would be good to understand the specification.
Don't mistake me. This is what we said, 221.1. Okay. That's where we are. And anything else will have to be discussed, obviously. This is precisely the exercise that we did, to actually pin down the frequency that we had, to actually silence all those discussions for the time being.
Okay, Remo. Oh, okay, I'll go it, it's okay.
It's a trivial question.
No question.
I was just wondering, it's always the case that when I count up the number of potential sites, it sort of depends on how you count, and you use the number 10. Can you just go back to your slide that showed the sites? And I think you only had 9 there. I don't think you were showing JCMT.
Yes. I don't know which slide you mean.
Yeah, that one. Well, the one without
SMA plus JCMT.
Yeah. No. It's kind of a long. It's a bit more complicated of a question.
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah.